Blog Talk Radio.
As they should be in American history at this time. And among those facts were that we hear about the Japanese, and I'll get into Senator Inouye, who was in the 442nd Division. He lost his arm. Also, the other senator from Kansas, Bob Dole, lost his use of his arm also, both in Italy, both these guys in Italy. Anyway, it is thought that only, or it's, we only hear that the Japanese on the West Coast in California were forcibly evacuated to the interior of the country and to places like Manzanar. Ironically, there were a lot of Japanese in Hawaii. In fact, the history of Hawaii is quite interesting. The joke is that the Chinese control the finances, the Japanese control the politics, or have controlled. The Navy runs the place, or did, and the Filipinos work in the fields and the pineapple plantations, and the native Hawaiians are on welfare, and they beat up Hawaiians, tourists. That was one of the myths about Hawaii. During World War II, not one Japanese, there was Sensei of the first generation, not one Sensei or even Nisei of the second generation who lived in Hawaii, American citizens, not one of them were forcibly removed from Hawaii. Yet General DeWitt Clinton and Governor Earl Warren, who later became Chief Justice of the United States. He was formerly the District Attorney of Alameda County, one of the most controversial counties here in California, promoted and urged Roosevelt to order the evacuation of the Japanese in California. Earl Warren, interestingly, of Scandinavian background, his son, James Warren, is a San Francisco Superior Court judge and was briefly involved in the U.S. Navy sailor Stephen Nery's case, and we'll get into that again because some new things have come up. But anyway, I have Sam Hayakawa. Those of you who remember the San Francisco State uprising, a student uprising in 1968, I was working at the time before I went back to school, back to college. The I remember the uprising there, student, and now we have Occupy that campus too. But anyway, Sam Hayakawa was the president of the college. A lot of people don't know that he was actually born in Vancouver, British Columbia. During World War II, he was not forced into the camps. There were Japanese in Canada who were also evacuated and forced into relocation camps, they called them. But anyway, Sam Hayakawa went to Chicago and worked for a black newspaper, the Chicago Defender. This is very interesting. You don't hear about that. Sam Hayakawa later married a Caucasian, and his children were student activists, and I think they went to Reed College in Portland. Also, things that you don't hear about that occurred in the early part of World War II was that there were Germans and Italians also forced into the relocation camps. There weren't that many because immigration to the United States, they were one of the largest immigrant groups to come to the United States along with the Irish. So these are political facts that deal with the fiction that only Japanese were sent to the camps. I'm going to play this clip from Senator Inouye. It's very important that how even this is admirable, and he was from Hawaii, that even Japanese, there were a few, Korematsu and another guy who refused to pledge allegiance to the United States, and so the famous case was finally resolved by the U.S. Supreme Court about, I think, 15 years ago. But anyway, Inouye and I guess he is since Nisei, second generation, volunteered to serve in the U.S. Army, and he served in Italy in the 442nd and lost his arm. There's also a famous movie about the 442nd Division, and it's also was the most decorated division in World War II. Let me play this clip.
Consider the fact that I'm 18, so your emotions are that of a young person. I was angered to realize that my government felt that I was disloyal and part of the enemy. And I wanted to be able to demonstrate, not only to my government, but to my neighbors, that I was a good American.
After Pearl Harbor, Washington had ordered some 110,000 Japanese aliens and American citizens of Japanese descent living along the West Coast out of their homes and into 10 internment camps. All Japanese American men of draft age, except those already in the armed forces, had been classified as enemy aliens, forbidden to serve their country. Then, in early 1943, Washington announced a new policy. Japanese American men were now going to be permitted to form a special segregated outfit, the 442nd Regimental Combat Team. When the Army called for 1,500 volunteers from Hawaii, where Japanese Americans had never been locked up, 10,000 turned up at recruiting offices, including a freshman in pre-medical studies at the University of Hawaii, Daniel Inouye.
And my father took time off, and we got on the streetcar, and he was very silent until we got close to the point of departure. He cleared his throat, and I knew something was coming. He's not a scholarly person, but I know he struggled, and he said, "This country has been good to us. It has given me two jobs. It has given you and your brothers and your sister education. We owe a lot to this country. Do not dishonor this country. Above all, do not dishonor the family. And if you must die, die in honor." You know, I'm 18 years old, and here he is telling me these heavy words. And I've always thought to myself, would I be able to say the same thing to my son?
I think that they may not really have known it themselves, but I think this feeling was instilled in them through all of our parents. called Yamato Damashi, and it's just it's like a proving of yourself, and that your loyalty goes beyond just saying it or talking it. You know, it's proving it, giving it your all, even if you die in the process by going to war. And I think that's so strongly instilled from when you're very young that I think that was one of the things that pushed them on.
Well, that was Senator Daniel Inouye. He's still in the U.S. Senate. He served honorably, but I think also it's time for him to retire from the Senate. Now we have, it's all over the wires, that another governor of Illinois, Blagojevic, Croatian ethnic, Roman Catholic, has been convicted, and he had led the court on and the public to, he should have shut his mouth, that he hadn't treated that seat, the U.S. Senate seat of Obama, for consideration, let's put it that way. And then I guess I haven't seen the transcript or anything, but the news is that he finally owned up to what he had, to the deceit that he pulled on the federal court, and they don't like that. Judges don't like that. Good judges don't like that. Incidentally, I did work in that building. That was my first job out of high school, out of boarding school, and I did some interesting things. I knew a lot of the judges at the time. In fact, the senior judge was William Campbell, and first judge appointed by Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Another interesting thing about the Seventh Circuit is that the U.S. attorney after World War II, getting back to World War II, was Otto Kerner, who was a governor, who was also convicted and went to federal prison in the 70s for things that he allegedly, or he said he didn't do, but was convicted of doing while he was governor of Illinois back in the 60s. He was U.S. attorney appointed by Harry Truman. Kerner made a statement that there was no such thing as the mafia in Illinois. I believe that's what it was. But, of course, we know Al Capone, all the other, the Chicago mafia mob or the Midwest mob, which incidentally spread into Wisconsin and down into, they used to winter down in Arkansas. So there's a lot of interesting history there. But anyway, he was just one, I guess Blagojevic, unless he appeals, he's got 30 days to appeal. I think it's 30 days. Whether he will just take his medicine and go to federal prison, they'll probably send him to a median security like Sandstone in Minnesota, which incidentally was where the Indians were sent who were captured after the Indian Wars and after Custer and Little Bighorn. In the 1870s, and there were executions there also, I believe. Now, another political fiction is that Illinois is the most corrupt state. Not so. In fact, the New York Times did a poll of journalists, and I think there were other studies done, and there have been several studies done, of corruption, public corruption in the United States. And surprisingly, Illinois is about in the upper third, but it is not a number one, numero uno. In fact, it is, I think, Louisiana. And also there was a big federal investigation and prosecution of the New Orleans Police Department where they were putting out, the police department there was putting out contracts on people. I mean, even they don't even do that. They didn't even do that in Chicago. The mob did, but not the Chicago Police Department, as far as I can remember. And from what history I know. Incidentally, from California back in the 60s to clean up the Chicago Police Department, there was a major scandal called the Sumner scandal, just getting back to public corruption. Mayor Daley, who was running for his second term, and his first term was the closest race he ever ran as long as he was mayor. After that, he was easily and handily, as they say, reelected. But he had the Summerdale police scandal of cops who were getting ready to retire, who were living in a quiet district of Chicago, caught a burglar, and they decided to put the burglar to work for them, and they were out of a police station called Summerdale. And the scandal broke, and all these cops were, just getting ready to retire, and instead they ended up being retired to a state prison because they were using a burglar to burglarize houses, and they were taking the profits. The story was called The Babbling Burglar, Richard Morrison. Now, what Mayor Daley did was he set up a committee, he was very good at this, to select the best policeman in the United States and invite him to come and take over and clean up the Chicago Police Department. So they brought in the professor from the University of California's School of Criminology. Professor was Orlando V. Wilson, another Scandinavian. He was a colonel in World War II in the U.S. Army in Germany. And he came to Chicago, put on a suit. He didn't wear the uniform. Moved the police department out of City Hall, and over to the police headquarters on South State near the railroad yards, and started to clean up the police department. And he transferred a lot of captains, brought in ethnic minorities, and promoted the competent, honest ones, and promoted honest cops. And for a long time, the Chicago Police Department was run by a Catholic Irish. For a lot of reasons, which we'll get into right now. But and then he retired and went back and died in Palm Springs, I think, in the 70s, 1970s, around there. But a very competent police commissioner, and I understand now they're back to some of their old ways. They even had a FBI agent they brought in recently. In fact, it was Mayor Daley II. But from what I understand from Patrick Butler, who was probably the foremost political journalist in Chicago, 50 years he's been at it. He was ahead of me in boarding school. But anyway, I asked him about this FBI agent, and he said the guy wasn't accepted. He had no street smarts or dealing with the Metropolitan Police Department. The FBI is quite different. Didn't work out, apparently. So that's basically, the thing about is Illinois the most corrupt state? It isn't. And in fact, when John Gotti was convicted back in the 80s by the U.S. attorney in a federal trial in the Southern District of New York, New York City is in the southern part of New York State. A lot of people don't know that. Some people think it's up near Canada. But anyway, it may as well be, according to some people. But anyway, the U.S. attorney at the time, after John Gotti he first tried to rig the juries in the first trial, and they found out about it and switched juries. Same thing happened earlier in the Al Capone trial in the Chicago Seventh Circuit Federal District in Chicago, and he got caught. And I remember when I worked in that building, some people getting ready to retire, and I made their acquaintance, and they had been around when Al Capone was trying to run Chicago. But anyway, the U.S. attorney at the time said that the John Gotti conviction was the beginning of the end of the mafia in New York, Chicago, and he talked about California, which hasn't been touched so far. And we have our corruption out here. We had the local judges and lawyers in San Diego. It wasn't well reported, of course, because this is one of those cases and news stories that should be reported but isn't and wasn't. And it was called the Frega case, F-E-G-A, and we'll get into that, where local judges in San Diego County and lawyers were convicted of public corruption. But there's a lot of it out here, and for some reason they think that they can get away with it because we're out here supposedly in what is called, what they call, and what is not, the left coast of the United States. People are very tolerant out here, and they came here to get away from the corruption in New York, Boston, Philadelphia, Kansas City, Detroit, Chicago, Denver, L.A., we're very tolerant out here, but there are limits, and we're far reaching the point of it's time for the pendulum to get a push and start swinging so that public corruption, those people who are engaged in it, for them, they're facing a broadsword or an axe, to put it mildly. But that's one of the other interesting things. Today also, let's get into the birthdays today. Among the birthdays today, Mary Queen of Scots, talking about execution and how she was railroaded, although she was a very rash woman, very intelligent, smart, from the French Catholic connection. And this movie with her and Glenda Jackson and Vanessa Redgrave is not accurate because Queen Elizabeth I and Mary Queen of Scots never met. Also, the woman that's, I guess, Bulgaria, but you'll end up in this museum, Madame Trousseau. She was born today. We had the great Italian composer talking about rustic behavior. The composer Cavalleria Rusticana was born today, Pietro Mascagni. Great woman author, also a lesbian claimer, Willa Cather, was born today. One of these operatic composers from Central Europe, Rudolf Frimmel, born today. Great writer, Hayward Hale Bruin, born today. And then the what I call the, some people call the Jewish Sousa, and let's honor him because we don't hear his music as much, and this is coming out of our archives. Excuse me, I have this bloody cold. And he wrote a famous march called On the Mall, and you don't hear it as much, but he was as talented as Sousa and Patrick Gilmore, people like that. And I know I had it here. Well, I'll play it when we find it. Among the other, Louis Prima, great jazz band leader, pop band leader would be called, Helen Gurley Brown, an actor that we don't hear too much about, Rod Cameron, came from Canada like a lot of our actors. He was born in Western Canada. This political activist, leftist, Noam Chomsky, was born today. Another great musician, Jean-Claude Casadou from the Casadou family, French family. And then we had the first woman governor of Kentucky, Martha Wayne Collins. She was born. And then Larry Bird, the big basketball player from Indiana University. Of course, we don't hear about any scandals there so far, but you never know. Because we're going to see more and more exposés, this is our forecast, of pedophilia and pederasty. Pederasty is the violations of youth who are over 18 or around that age. Pedophilia is below the age of majority. And it can affect both boys and girls can be assaulted and have been, and unfortunately. Let's see. Among the deaths today, we have the great French Marshal, very rash. If you saw the movie Waterloo, Marshal Ney, he was executed today. And then also today, Captain Bligh, who surprisingly, he was not an aristocrat, and he rose through the British naval ranks to become a captain and later retired as a rear admiral. And, of course, that movie, Mutiny on the Bounty, the first one with Charles Laughton, who incidentally was gay, and Clark Gable, and some questions about his early life and how he got to become a star, was not accurate. Bligh actually was brilliant at navigation. They set him adrift in a boat and with a sail and a compass when he was in the Pacific, and he managed to sail a couple of thousand miles to Bermuda, and then he got another ship and went in search of the mutineers on the Bounty and found some of them, and they were brought back to England, court-martialed, and hung. But of course, that's a fascinating story because Pitcairn Island was mislabeled on all of the British naval maps of the time, and they never did find those people, and eventually they became under the authority of jurisdiction of New Zealand, and I think there have been some interesting things that have happened since. But let me get that little clip because it's very interesting. Where the heck is he? Excuse me. I still have that cold, and of course this is the weather, and we have so many clips here that I've got to get. I'm going to eliminate some of these. There's just so many of them. But it's just really interesting that there have been three movies since the original Mutiny on the Bounty with Clark Gable and Charles Laughton, and they're all slightly different. I think the last one was with Marlon Brando and Trevor Howard, if I'm not mistaken. But you should read the book, and this is another example of history according to Hollywood. And incidentally, coming up Friday is the birthday, or it's actually tomorrow, is the birthday of one of the greatest mayors in the history of the United States, George Christopher, who came here legally as an immigrant, and became mayor, started a business, Berkeley Farms Dairies, was diplomatic representative for President Eisenhower, saved the summits, quite a guy, and was my friend for many years, and we did several interviews, which I have. We also did a video, which we're not going to release right away, but I will. It'll be the whole day. The whole program will be dedicated to. It's called Christopher. George really did it, and the advice that he gave in these interviews is very applicable to what's going on today with municipal governments all around the United States. You know, since I can't find this, let's just play how the U.S. Navy saw itself in World War II, Victory at Sea. Well, we'll end with that. And I guess you're getting tired of politics and poker. People are getting tired of politicians. So we'll be back Friday. Saluted, Christopher. Good night.